Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Monday Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It's 1:06 p.m. the Pacific Summer Time. Today is July 1st, first day of the third quarter. And the Nasdaq was up another 100 points in here today, closed at a new all-time high. Well, one thing we can say over the course of the last month is that breakouts haven't been sustained, and it has tended to dip down after hitting a new high. So the big question is whether an advance tomorrow will be sustained, and then would we see another pullback, maybe this time to another higher reaction low? These are obvious questions when we look at the moderation in the speed of the advance over the course of the last month relative to the rebound we had from March. But there is obviously, then we have to look at some of the constituents. And when we look at, for example, the Nasdaq, then it's the big companies, the mega caps, account for an increasingly large proportion of the index. Microsoft, for example, has continued to push on through that psychological $200 area, and it was up again in here today in a really rather impressive manner. Apple has also been among the best performers. It was in mildly negative territory today, relative to the open at least, but it's still trending higher, and there's still the sequence of higher reaction lows. I think the big standout is Facebook. It has rebounded in incredibly robust fashion, coming straight back up to test this $240 area. Well, we're going to find out tomorrow whether this has been enough to deter the bears. Will it be able to push through the 240 area in here tomorrow? Mark Zuckerberg has decided that he's going to go and meet some of the organizers of the boycott against Facebook. We'll see if that comes to any kind of fruition. But even as the technology sector continues to outperform, and companies like Tesla and Netflix have been doing particularly well, Tesla very clearly breaking through the $1,000 level. Netflix was also among the best performers in here today, and up really quite significantly, not far off, well, probably about 8%. When we start to think about what is going on here, well, obviously it's tied to liquidity. It's also tied to the fact that these are growth companies, and growth companies thrive on abundant liquidity and low interest rates. And, well, when we look at those low interest rates, the 10-year yield is still only around 67 basis points. Yields were a little steadier in here today, and part of the reason for that was because the Federal Reserve has been less than enthusiastic to fully embrace the idea of yield curve control. However, if we look at the yield curve, then it doesn't really matter whether the Fed is willing to say that yield curve control is a good thing, a bad thing, or something they're willing to countenance. The reality is that the bond market has already concluded that yield curve control is underway, and the spread has been at 50 basis points for 3 months now. There's been quite a bit of volatility around that measure, but it's been extremely steady over just the last couple of weeks. So it looks increasingly likely that bond investors have simply concluded that we're already in a yield curve control environment. Well, that is taking a toll on the banking sector, because how are banks supposed to make money when there is only a 50 basis point pickup between the short and the long end of the curve? And that is universally true. What's also, I think, particularly relevant is when we look at the UK banking sector. In fact, it is right back down on its lows, and there is a downward bias to trading. Now, it would be easy to conclude that this is because of Hong Kong, and HSBC and Standard Chartered occupy more than 60% of the index. But Lloyds, for example, doesn't have an operation outside the UK, and it is also back on the lows. Well, of course, this is they're underperforming for exactly the same reason that banks in the US are. Interest rates are likely to remain low for a prolonged period of time, and central banks are increasingly taking over the liquidity provision measures or position in the market that banks would traditionally have occupied. So this is a sector that is likely to remain under pressure for the foreseeable future. But when we then think about all the challenges that are, and they're identical challenges, that face Europe, the European banking sector has continued to hold the 60 area. And as long as it's doing that, well then, this looks like a first step above the base. What I find particularly interesting is that some people are now starting to refer to gold and the trend that we've had over the course of the last couple of years as a cup and saucer, or a teacup and handle chart pattern. This is, I think the way that we would describe that is as a base formation with a first step above the base. We've had that in gold, and now gold is right in the region of this $1,800 area. It paused in here today. But it's also benefiting from low interest rates and the rather strong likelihood that interest rates are going to stay low for a prolonged period of time, and that they won't rise until well after inflationary pressures begin to boil over. Now, one thing that I think is particularly relevant, even as the NASDAQ continues to outperform, it's that Main Street isn't doing especially well, and the Russell 2000 has yet to push back above the 200-day moving average. There are still a lot of questions outstanding about the ability of large numbers of companies to thrive in an environment where we're still very uncertain about just how well the coronavirus is going to be got under control, then kept under control, before we eventually do get a vaccine. The Dow Jones is also still below its trend mean. Now, these chart patterns are really quite similar to what we see in Europe, in the UK, or in a substantial number of other countries. These rebounds we've seen back to the region of the trend mean have been particularly impressive, and this very similar chart pattern that we have between Australia, the UK, Europe, then also in more Australia, obviously being a commodity dominant country, then Canada is really quite similar, and it is also right in the region of its trend mean. But then there are some significant differences, because when we start to think about exactly what would accommodate the argument for why one should favor one market over another, well, it's got to come back to currencies. And the dollar index was in negative territory in here today. But the more important point is that this little range that's been forming for most of June has really never looked like anything other than a distribution within a developing, or at least a completing, top formation. It's looking increasingly likely that the dollar is going to trend downwards. Now, that is something that I think is particularly relevant, because we have the clear potential that it is going to, I think, attract investments from outside those respective markets, or potentially that it will siphon money away from Wall Street, because the interest rate differential, or excuse me, the yield differential between their respective markets, where you can pick up 127 basis points over treasuries by buying the S&P 500. But if you then think about going to, for example, the UK, then you're going to pick up approximately 400 basis points. So That is not especially attractive when the currency is not in your favor, but when the currency is in your favor, well, then you are in a rather, I think, attractive position. I think that this is what we're starting to see, is that some investors are beginning to look at the overvaluation that we have in the USA and think, well, yes, certainly there is an argument to continue to support technology, and those technology shares continue to do very well, and they are obviously the clearest beneficiaries of the lockdowns and the acceleration of the migration towards the kinds of solutions that they offer, whether that is in the cloud computing sector or in the work at home sector. But then, of course, we have the fact that Main Street isn't doing especially well. But Main Street's not doing especially well just about anywhere. And the potential is that the USA is further behind in controlling the coronavirus than other countries are, and that should at least add some weight to the potential that Main Streets elsewhere will potentially recover first. So we're certainly seeing some interest coming through in in UK equities, or at least UK assets, particularly with the potential that the pound will recover, or indeed that the euro will recover. You can still pick up 300 basis points, give or take, in the EU over bunds. When we then think about Australia, that figure is closer to about 300 basis points as well. When we think about Canada, it's perhaps, I think it's around, yes, around the 3% level as well. One thing that I've noticed over the course of the last decade is that when investors can pick up a 3.5% yield, they generally tend to jump at it. We've certainly seen that with yields on individual shares. But when interest rates are very low, then you can pick up 300 basis points, whether you are looking at the USA, or excuse me, the UK, Europe, Canada, Australia. It's equally true in higher yielding markets, historically, like New Zealand, in fact, did not see their yield differential increase in the same way that other places had. Then, when we think about the Swiss market, and I'm rather at a loss as to why that is not working. So I'm going to see if I can pull that up in another way. But certainly, what we have is there's the potential here that an international investor could potentially pick up a significant yield bump by investing outside of the USA. And there is the potential, at least, that other countries are going to come out of this crisis in a better position than the USA has. Then, of course, we have the fact that we're probably going to have a very uncertain political environment in the USA for at least the next 6 months. And that could quite easily put downward pressure on the dollar. Now, when we think about if the dollar is in fact going to experience some additional selling pressure, it should be apparent in other currencies. So the euro does look like it is consolidating. And if it sustains a move back above 114, well, then we're back in an uptrending environment. It's already broken the downtrend. Now, when we think about the pound, there is obviously a great deal of uncertainty about the outcome from Brexit negotiations with the EU, but it does look like that's a failed break below 120, and that there is potential here for at least higher to lateral ranging. Then, when we think about Japan, and I just see that Japan is probably the only market I haven't really created one of those spreads charts for yet, but the Japanese yen is strengthening against the US dollar, and there has been a trend of the yen strengthening, although in a very mild way, for most of the last 4 years. So there is the potential that the yen will continue to strengthen versus the US dollar. Now, when we look at the yield, for example, on the Nikkei, well, the Nikkei itself is above its trend mean, which is quite different to a number of the indices around the world. And the 10-year yield, the dividend yield is 1.95%. When we then think about the yield control measures that have been underway by the Bank of Japan, then you're only getting 4 basis points. So there is a significant pickup here as well. It's larger than you get in the USA, but narrower than just about everywhere else. Now, these are, I think, considerations that are going to become more relevant as the dollar trends downwards. But it's also something that should help to stoke interest in commodities. And the CCI index was in positive territory in here today, up in a reasonably dynamic manner so far this week, pushing on to a new recovery high. It is being led higher by the copper price, and copper was up again in here today. When we look at some of the individual copper miners, like Southern Copper, then it is coming back up to test that $40 area. It's had difficulty at $40 on two separate occasions at least over the last 2 years. It's going to have to at least sustain a move above it in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment beyond the steadying we've seen over the last 3 months. The nickel price is also something that I think is worth paying attention to, because it has broken its sequence of lower rally highs. Now, it's been a very choppy trend over the course of the last 2 years, but there is certainly the potential that it will do better, most particularly if we do see some of the more aggressive growth forecasts for electric vehicles in fact come to fruition. Now, when we then think about, well, what is it that could help the outlook for the commodity sector? A weaker dollar certainly could help it. Then we have the potential for electric vehicles to stoke demand for copper, for nickel, for lithium. There is obviously going to be some back and forth in terms of which of those metals offer the most acute supply inelasticity meets rising demand argument. Certainly there was that argument for lithium about 5 years ago, but a great deal of investment has gone through into new supply for lithium, so it's the lithium price has been trending downwards. Cobalt prices have collapsed, and it is quite likely that cobalt is going to be excised from battery chemistry over the course of the next, let's see if I'm going to be just type in the cobalt ticker. That's again not something a ticker I put in particularly often. The price got up to such an extraordinary level in 2018 that it prompted substitution, and Tesla's newest batteries in China, or in the Model 3 that's being produced in China, don't use cobalt at all. So there is the clear potential that it is no longer going to be a battery metal. But for the new chemistries, they're using a lot more nickel, and that is likely to be a supply inelasticity market. But nickel is a byproduct, or I guess palladium is a byproduct of producing nickel, and the rather extraordinary move we had in palladium greatly stoked the ability of nickel miners to produce. Now, what's interesting here is that palladium prices are coming back down, and palladium was in negative territory in here today. It is right in the region of its trend mean, but not quite above it. And if it sustains a move below $1,800, that is likely to contribute to supply destruction. And if we do get supply destruction, then that will be positive for the nickel price. So there is some push and pull in this particular market. And having accelerated to an extraordinary height of $2,800 and subsequently dropping 50%, at the very minimum, we're likely to see a great deal of volatility in the palladium price, because we're still in an uncertain environment, and most particularly because the vast majority of palladium is used in industrial resources. One thing, though, that we are seeing is that the Baltic Dry Index has rebounded, and that is suggestive that international trade is beginning to pick back up. That's also, I think, evidenced in what we're seeing in some of the commodities. And of course, there is a big bet out there that we're going to have significantly more infrastructure development in 2021. When we look at some of the big miners like Rio Tinto, they are coming back up now to the highs put in around 2011. And they've rebounded rather admirably. The big question now is whether they can sustain these moves above their respective trend means. And I do think that there is the world of difference between the markets that have been able to push back above their trend means and those that haven't. If we see an increasing number doing that, then it's highly likely that we have seen the worst from the pullback. The very wide interest rate differentials we have over bonds is something that is going to attract money in off the sidelines, because people cannot accept a zero return indefinitely, and most particularly if they are worried about inflation. That's one of the reasons why gold continues to do well over the medium term, but it is a volatile instrument, and this $1,800 area has previously been a psychological Rubicon, and it may take another little while before we see prices substantially above it. I think with that, I'll leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.